I'm still continuing to speak about the kingdom. And in essence, when I speak about the kingdom, or when I speak about who we are in Christ, or Christian identity, or who we are as Christians, it's all one and the same bundle, actually. And in amongst all of that stuff, there is the spiritual gifts, and all it's all part of the multifaceted understanding of what the kingdom is and our place in it. So I'm going to read you a passage that is not normally read when you're talking about the kingdom. But it's because I want specifically this morning to just be a little bit more practical. It's Colossians 2, verse 6 onwards. And it goes like this, and this is the message. My counsel for you is simple and straightforward. Just go ahead with what you've been given. You received Jesus Christ, the Master. Now, live in him. You're deeply rooted in him. You're well constructed upon him. You know your way around the faith. Now do what you've been taught. School's out. Quit studying the subject and start living it. And let your living spill over into thanksgiving. Watch out for people who try and dazzle you with big words and intellectual double talk. They want to drag you off into endless arguments that never amount to anything. They spread their ideas through the empty traditions of human beings and the empty superstitions of spirit beings. But that's not the way of Christ. Everything of God gets expressed in him, so you can see and hear him clearly. You don't need a telescope, a microscope, or a horoscope to realize the fullness of Christ and the emptiness of the universe without him. When you come to him, that fullness comes together for you too. His power extends over everything. Entering into this fullness is not something to figure out or achieve. It's not a matter of being circumcised or keeping a long list of laws. No, you are already insiders. Not through some secretive initiation rite, but through what Christ has already gone through for you, destroying the power of sin. If it's an initiation ritual you're after, you've already been through it by submitting to baptism. Going under the water was a burial of your old life. Coming up out of it was a resurrection. God raising you from the dead as he did Christ. When you were stuck in your old sin-dead life, you were incapable of responding to God. God brought you alive along with Christ. Think of it. All sins forgiven, the slate wiped clean, the old arrest warrant cancelled and nailed to Christ's cross. He stripped all the spiritual tyrants in the universe of their sham authority at the cross and marched them naked through the streets. We are talking about the kingdom, and here's the verse. And it links together with what we were reading earlier on and what we've been looking at in the prayer that the Lord taught us. And this is the part that we will focus on today. The last line is, deliver us from evil. Now the first few lines of the Lord's Prayer go, Our Father, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We've concentrated a lot on his will being done on earth as it is in heaven. But then there's some imperatives that come. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we forgive others. Do not lead us into temptation. And then this last one. But deliver us from evil. Or from the evil one is a better translation. And the verse that I want to focus on from Paul in Colossians is this. He stripped all the spiritual tyrants in the universe of their sham authority at the cross and marched them naked through the streets. And the reason that I like that translation is that it's visceral and visual. He stripped all these tyrants. It's like the triumphal march of the Roman emperors who used to beat up their rivals and then take them to Rome and march them through the streets and humiliate them in front of the Roman crowd to prove how powerful they were. And what Paul is saying to the Colossian church is exactly the same, that Jesus had no mercy on these authorities, these sham authorities. He stripped them naked. And he's marching them through the streets. The way that the New American puts it is like this. He disarmed the rulers and authorities and made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through him. When we talk about the kingdom, and we are talking about, in a sense, the split between authority and power, all authority in heaven and earth is given to Jesus. The commission that he gives in Matthew 28 is simple. It's clear. And then he passes that on to us. So it's the authority that we are given. The power still belongs to him. So when you read in Revelation, it says all honor and glory and power and dominion. The fact that God is supreme and he reigns is his prerogative. He has the power. But the authority is delegated. And maybe what I'm also like a visual thing, I must say. It's much easier. So I was reading N.T. Wright this week, and he talks about the fact that when we talk about heaven and earth and us as Christians, we have this almost twofold thing that's happening. We live in two worlds. We live already, but not yet. We're in the kingdom. We're in heaven. Heaven comes to earth. It's all finding its place in our bodies. He says we speak two languages, actually. We still speak the colloquial language of earth, but we're learning the language of heaven, which is the language of love and kindness and gentleness and goodness and faithfulness and self-control and so on. And he says, imagine it like this. He once saw a chameleon. How many of you have handled a chameleon? They're wonderful little things. They move so slowly. It's brilliant. And they can be tiny little things like this or quite big. And it's the most amazing sensation. But to watch them transitioning from one part of a branch or a bush to something else, as they are moving, so they are changing. And there can be times when a chameleon is kind of half brown and half green. Because there's a sense of the movement from one to the other and the transition and the change that's taking place. The essence of the chameleon is still the same. He's still the chameleon. But there is a change taking place because he's at that moment living in two worlds. Now, it's got problems as an illustration. But it gives a kind of a concrete idea that we live in two worlds. That heaven has come to earth. And we have been given the authority, the keys, if you like, to the kingdom. Now, I'm not going to go into a whole lot of details about the keys of the kingdom and all that sort of stuff. But suffice to say that as Christians, we have been given keys that can unlock stuff that cannot be unlocked unless we're involved. So I want to be a little bit more practical this morning and say, if we are willing to try and see what God is doing and to do it with him, it will unlock stuff for other people and for ourselves, that is just not possible had we not taken that risk. There will be a transitioning, a moving into a new dimension, a forming or transforming that takes place, if you like, a growing up and a maturing, when we take the risk to move. We want what someone has called a Disney moment, where the fairy godmother flies in with her wings all abuzz and goes, ting! And we are transformed without any kind of drama. We're just different. God hasn't designed it like that. He's designed the world as we live in it now for us to be engaged with it. And when we say we want to be real people in a real community on a real mission, we are who we are. We are human beings with all the complexity and beauty that that is, but with all the brokenness and kind of underlying problems that that has as well. We have been welcomed into life by God. And that passage talks about clearly that we are death is behind us, guys. When Paul says to the Corinthian church, death, where is your sting? There is no fear in death any longer. Death is behind me. I died long ago. This body will transition to something else at some point, but death is no longer an issue. And if you can live like that, then nothing else has a problem creates a problem for you, because we're already in the process of living a life that is eternal and full and abundant in Christ. Now, let me just say this. It's not difficult in one sense. It just takes one little step, the first step. And I think that we always want, no, not always, so often we wait until we think we are ready. We wait until we think that we've better equipped. We wait until we think that we are skilled enough or we've practiced enough before we go and want to do something. Because in the world that we live in, there's not a high level of tolerance for failure. Winning is what counts. And God doesn't work like that. Life doesn't work like that. We didn't beat our kids up when they started walking and they fell over. We didn't. Oh, cute. We picked them up and they started walking again until they could do it. When it comes to living a life in the kingdom, God's not going to kind of pull the rug from under you because you didn't get it right first time round, you idiot. He celebrates the fact that you're trying. And he says, didn't get it right that time, but let's just steady you and off you go again. Now, one of the lessons that I learned early on, as far as this is concerned, was from a lady called Kerry Groves. She got married to a South African. She was an Australian. She was then known as Kerry Southey. And I got a phone call from a colleague saying, I've had this lady in our church. I'm sure you'd love to have her in your church. I said, yes. Gail and I were fairly new in ministry at that stage. We had little kids. And I drove about an hour and a half to fetch her. She came. She stayed with us a week. And she was a single woman. She had been a journalist on a big Australian newspaper, had experienced a dramatic conversion to Christ in the sense that suddenly she woke up to the fact that there was a God, and her life changed. And one of her friends, with a great deal of wisdom, said to her, whenever you have someone that comes in your orbit, and she made this her thing. She had a tiny little flat. Friends came around. She said, can I pray for you? So she's brand new as a Christian. I don't think they'd even wipe the placenta off her. And she has a friend around because she was a bit of a party animal. And she said before the friend left, can I pray for you? Now, first of all, that blew the friend away because where was this coming from? And so she said, yes. And so she started to pray for this woman. And when she opened her eyes, this lady was standing in front of her, and if I recall correctly, her mouth was hanging open and tears were running down her face. And she said, how did you know all that? And Kerry said, how did I know what? Now, the stuff you just prayed. What did I pray? See, she started out by taking the risk to pray, and what she prayed was what came into her mind at that moment. She trusted that God was saying something through her. By the time she reached us, she was comfortable enough to stand up in a group and trust that when God put someone in front of her, that she would be able to speak what God wanted to say to them. By the time she died some years ago now, she was an international conference speaker, and she had to make a plan to stay at home 6 months out of the year because life just opened up for her. Now, I don't think that God's going to make all of us conference speakers. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm coming to with this is that the thing was never fully grown right at the beginning. Her capacity to hear God, her confidence in the fact that he would give her in the moment the stuff that she needed, wasn't fully developed. It was just she did it. And then she realized something happened, so she did it again and again and again. And I thought, you know, in a way that's been how my life has worked. So when it came to, as a teenager, I can remember people saying, you know, you need to respond when you think God's telling you something. And I went after school one day to visit my mom in hospital. And I read to her for a while. I spent some time with her. And as I left, She was on about the fourth or fifth floor of a hospital block. Got in the lift, and there was this woman. I was a teenager, 16, I think. 15, I can't remember. And this woman got into the lift, and I just knew, just doors closed, just the two of us. Just knew I had to say something to her about Jesus. Don't know how I was going to do it. And I started to sweat. And we hit the ground floor, and she walked. Epic fail. Because I was just too scared. I was just, how could I do? I mean, it was like, sorry, God. But I remember the first time I went to do deliverance. We had a woman in our church, and they'd had all kinds of things going on in their home. And she asked for someone to come and pray for deliverance. I didn't know the first thing about it. I was delegated. I was a youth guy at that stage. So fortunately, an Indian colleague went with me who had done this his whole life. And we got there, we had a cup of tea. He asked a few questions about what had been happening. And part of the stuff was she'd been into all sorts of things. And there were doors opening and things going on and all kinds of nonsense going around in the house. So we had a cup of tea, and I was expecting some drama. We went upstairs, and he said, okay, let's pray. He prayed. I don't know that we even prayed for more than 2 or 3 minutes. And he prayed a prayer and told these things to get lost. And we went downstairs, and we said goodbye. And I don't know whether the woman in the home was satisfied with it, but I thought, hold on a second. That afternoon, her little boy came home from school, and they had a huge house with an atrium at the front where you walked into this double-volume area. He came home from school, and I need to tell you that he was 7 or 8. He was still wetting his bed. He wouldn't sleep in his own room. There were all kinds of problems they had with him. And he walked in after school, and he said, Mom, the house feels different. That night, without helping, he got himself bathed, got into bed, and went to sleep. Never wet his bed again. And all the junk in the house stopped. And I realized then that it's not, you don't have to arm wrestle the stuff. We have got the authority that Jesus has given us. It's just a case of, let me just remind you what's happened. As we remind ourselves what's happened. Jesus died and rose for us. These enemies, these malign and malignant powers have been defeated. It's a done and dusted deal. Same with healing. Remember the one day Gail and I went, we called to a lady in our church. This is in another congregation. And I don't know, I wasn't in a great frame of mind, but she wanted us to pray for a headache. And I thought, you know. So, all I'm trying to say to you, I was not in the best place in the world. And we stood in the middle of her lounge, and it was Gail and her, I think her daughter was there, I can't remember, and myself. And I kind of went, and I was looking out the window praying. And halfway through the prayer, she said, it's gone! And I thought, are you sure? And you know, again, there's another, it wasn't anything that I was doing, it was just that I was being obedient, even reluctantly obedient, and God did something because we were doing it. What I'm trying to say is that whatever you've got in your hand, whatever's before you, and what does it say? Whatever your hand finds to do, do with all your might. It just takes a little step, guys. It takes the first step. It doesn't take a lot. And you will always, doesn't matter how long you follow Jesus, you will always have to cross the chicken line. It's not like you do this for 6 months and magically it's just like falling off a log, it's easier. There's always a sense, is this right, is this not? Because it has to do with us trusting Him. You always have to try. You always will have to trust that this is what God is calling you to do. You always have the choice to be obedient. And you will always need courage. Here's the other thing I want to remind you of here, is that in the beginning of this passage, before it starts saying those things, it says, My counsel for you is simple and straightforward. Just go ahead with what you've been given. What have you been given? What have you been given? What do you do? Where are you? Who do you know? Those are the things that you have been given. Do something with it. Just go ahead with what you've been given. You receive Jesus Christ the Master, now live in him. You're deeply rooted in him. You're well constructed upon him. You know your way around the faith. You don't have to have everything sorted before you do something. That's all it's saying. You have the authority to pray for people when they're sick, to ask God to deliver people and set them free, to speak to them about your faith, to be kind, to do all the things that we just know that's who we are. Why? Because the fullness of God is already in you. It's in me. We have been given what we need. I just want to, at this moment, say that there's kind of a misnomer that people have a healing ministry or a ministry in prophecy and stuff like that. I don't subscribe to that. We have the gift of the Holy Spirit. All that we are required to do is to be faithful in the circumstances that we are. So if someone is in front of you and they are sick, then you don't have the gift of leadership at that point, do you? What do? You pray for them that they are healed. And it's in a sense like this, is that we have a toolbox that we carry around with us. Now, just bear with me. This is not a sort of a bad illustration, but in a sense, we have been given the gift of the Spirit. And when we are in front of somebody, or when we're in a situation, or whatever it happens to be, it's as if we then have to say, God, what do I need to do here? And you dig into your bag and you pull out the healing, or God gives you the tool that you need in that circumstance. Now, it's not, again, like the chameleon, it's not a perfect illustration. But what I want to say is that sometimes people become very comfortable using one of the tools, and so God keeps putting it in their hand, but it still belongs to him. It's not yours. You don't have some sort of magic access to doing this or that. It's God who gives the power as we do it. And I suppose in a way it's like a hand in a glove. We are actually making ourselves open for God to put his hand into us and to use us in a way that is far more than if we were just on our own. In this sense, then, it's a partnership. And it's not an equal partnership where it's 50% of Tom and 50% of God. And it's not a partnership with any particular percentage relationship. So it's not 99% Mark and 1% God. It's the grace of God and our obedience. And there is a mix of that. And sometimes it's more of this and more of me or more of God. It doesn't really matter. The fact is that we are moving out and we are taking the steps that are necessary. Now, the reason I told you about Kerry is because there was a kind of a visual image for us over a long period of time, from the time when she started by just praying for her mates who came to her flat to party, to when she was exploring what this looked like, to the time when, just before her death, she was speaking at conferences all over the world. There was a growth, a development, a maturity. Look for that kind of growth for yourself. It's not only that you exercise it and you get stronger. So when your child stands up and takes his first step and his second step, and we all get excited and we now got 50 cell phones photographing, videoing the whole thing. You have to keep moving. If you don't, you atrophy and you lose the muscular power that you have to be able to do that stuff. If you do it and then step back and don't do it again, then you have to start again. And I think that for me, the whole thing is that we grow into these things. So when some people have God gives them pictures or illustrations. Some people God gives scriptures. Other people God gives clear kind of words or messages. For others it's an impression. Ask God to give you more of that. Ask for that to be developed. So you have a sense for people to be healed. Well, then ask God for some more of that. Say, what are you saying? I sense there's someone here with a sore shoulder. Well, okay, don't just blurt it out. Say, well, okay, what kind of shoulder is that? Was it the right or the left? Begin to develop the giftedness that you experience when you're standing before people. And practice. It sounds spiritual stuff. Do you practice spiritual stuff? Absolutely. And that's what being part of a family is. And we're going to practice on one another because it's a safe environment. No, because it's a safe place. This is family. And even when we fail, and even when we do something stupid, when we off out in front of other people, it's not the end of the world. We just stand up and carry on again. We learn to walk as we get stronger and stronger. So there's not any rocket science attached to this morning. It's just, I wanted to encourage you practically. And what they say is when you've got to be a couch potato, doesn't matter what you do as long as you start to move. Isn't that true? And sometimes those first steps are the hardest steps. But once you start to have the endorphins all pumping through your system and you are feeling like you could run a marathon, no one's going to stop you. Start where you are, basically. Whatever your hand finds to do, whatever's in front of you, do it with all your might. So, here ends the lesson for today.